So welcome to another day, another talk. It's very nice this morning, cool and sunny. I know someone just suggested we should have the talk in the sun. That's all you're talking about. This is the sun. The sun of the Buddha's wisdom, the sun of the Sangha's heart, warming you in places where the sun can never reach. And hopefully it does that. It is nice because I came out a bit too early, so I just sat down and I just noticed myself that I wasn't planning the talk, I was just enjoying being here. And that's what the meditation retreat is all about. So many people can come to Jhana Grove and they never meditate. They're always going somewhere else, always planning the next move. Always washing all your sheets now to get ahead of the queue later on. Packing up your bags, preparing to leave. My goodness, you haven't left yet. As I said, most of our life is preparing to go somewhere else. This is a nice little home, this place. So what I don't mean it's a place where you can come and think this is home. I'm talking about the present moment. It's a lovely home. We can come to. So many people, they work hard and build a house, but they never live in it. They're always going somewhere else. Or they keep cleaning the house, but they never enjoy it. You can understand what I mean here. Always going places, doing things. And hopefully on this meditation retreat, you've learned not to go places, but to stay where you are. Not to try and achieve things. So all of you who've wasted the last, I don't know how many days, trying to get somewhere. What's it ever got you? Same old, same old, same old. Frustration, trying to get something, never quite getting there. Even if you get a nimitta, it's never quite beautiful enough. Even if you do get a jhana, it's only the first, and I want the four. Whatever you do in life, there's always something more. It's never quite enough. 8 or 9 days, it's not enough, I want 10 days. I'm sure one more day and I'll get it. I noticed that years ago when the monks over the monastery used to, we do these 2-week retreats, and still do them. And I asked the people afterwards, being their teacher, said, how do you go? And they said, just after about 2 weeks, I was just getting into it. And so I heard that so many times, I gave them 3 weeks to meditation retreat. And after 3 weeks, how are you going? I was just getting into it. I think you got the message. You're just getting into it now. Now you've got to leave. Isn't that your life? Always just about to get it, but not now. So remember, now is the only time you have. This is the retreat right now. Trying to get places. It's not meditating. So that's why last night they were saying that I have been meditating for 30 retreats. No, you haven't. You've been trying to get things for 30 retreats. Trying to attain stages. Trying to get rid of things. We've never been meditating. Because if you've been meditating, you just realize just how easy it is to be peaceful. You're not going anywhere. Not trying to get anything, you're just being peaceful. I did mention this at the beginning, but I'm not sure if it got into anybody's heads. In Buddhism, we have these things called the 5 hindrances. Enemy number one, with will, are there behind them all. That is what stops you from meditating. The 5 hindrances. And what are those hindrances? Wanting is number one. Aversion is just part of wanting. It's when you get frustrated. Then you got sloth and torpor, which come when you're just too tired. You work so hard, you're just dull. Restlessness was another form of wanting. It just gets your mind moving all the time. 4 of those 5 are all to do with wanting. The other one is not knowing what you're supposed to be doing. But you can see that those are the hindrances which stop you getting peaceful. I've been trying to teach all weekend, don't want anything, just be here. When you be here, straight away you cut off the 5 hindrances. Now you're meditating. Just being here, not wanting anything. And sometimes people say, oh yeah, we do that, but it doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? What you mean is you wanted to get something, but it never came. That's not letting go. That's just being sneaky, thinking you're letting go to try and get something. Your mind is just so devious. So if it really is letting go, if it really is no desire, making peace, you're just sitting out there, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm not going anywhere, I'm just being here. Not wanting anything in the whole world. Good things, bad things, worldly things, immaterial things. Not wanting anything. And if you can get a mind like that, you know you have these beautiful moments in your life, so peaceful, so content. I think everyone's had those moments, they call them like spiritual experiences. I recall one of the first times I had one of those experiences. Not deep, but it was certainly memorable. About, I think, 13 years of age, and we were having a half-day holiday from school. And I didn't have that much homework to do. So just instead of playing soccer with my mates, you know, in the schoolyard, I just went into the library and finished off all my homework. And once the homework was all finished, I left the school gates, had a free afternoon. I had nothing to do, no appointments, nowhere to go. And I felt this incredible state of sense of freedom. Because all these demands put upon me, mostly by your teachers, you've got to do this, you've got to study that, you've got to get this homework in by tomorrow. All your parents telling you to clean this, telling you to do that. All your friends, you know, trying to sort of live up to peer pressure. And worst of all, for me, trying to sort of do something or get somewhere, improve myself. And there for one afternoon, I realized I didn't have to do anything of that at all. There was nobody outside of me or inside of me telling me what to do or where to go. And it's just total freedom. And even as a 13-year-old, I recognized, well, this is really neat, this is really nice. Because even as a kid these days, you don't get that freedom very often. You're always stressed out from the time you first go to school. You can't just play and waste time. And if you are wasting time, other people, you know, they turn you off. Or if they don't turn you off, you feel guilty. Of just sitting down and doing absolutely nothing. So hopefully on this retreat you realize that sitting down and doing absolutely nothing, not trying to get anywhere, just being, just feeling the sun, just looking at the trees, watching them grow, or just sitting in here, just being, that is overcoming the hindrances. And once the hindrances are overcome, it's only a matter of time. That's how meditation happens. And I've been going on that all week. And hopefully that, look, it's a waste of time you trying to get anything now, isn't it? You've been working really hard and you've got so little. You've been trying, sitting hour after hour. So look, you're not going to get anything now. So now, let go, just relax, you know, for the rest of the day. And there's a very, very good chance you might get jhana. Now you've given up and you've forgotten and left and just, oh, what the hell. And that is the attitude which we're trying to teach here. Now some of you hasn't really sunk in 100% yet, but one of these days it will. And that's the whole reason I teach these retreats. Not to get instant results on this retreat, because again there's no results, but teach you the attitude of a meditator. The attitude of a renunciant. I'm not talking about giving up your house, your bank accounts, your stocks and shares, your kids and your husband, your wife, even though that might be tempting sometimes. I'm talking about sort of giving up these things inside of ownership. Sometimes I ask myself, why do I want these things? You know, because somebody somewhere sort of advertised and brainwashed me, this is really worth getting. You know, you go out there, and, you know, once you get married, then you'll be happy. You know, once you get rich, then you'll be set up for life. If you become famous, you've made it in life. You're one of the beautiful people, the celebrities. Once you get healthy, then you'll be free. And all of these, once I get there, then I'll be happy business. I saw through that a long time ago. And I also saw through that in the spiritual life as well. Once I get nimitta, then I'll be happy. No, you're not. With that attitude, you want the jhana. Once I get first jhana, then I'll be happy. Doesn't matter how much bliss that first jhana is, it's still not enough. It goes. So I want sort of a stream winning, or I want full enlightenment. And this is one of the problems. You can see that that is not the path of freedom. That is a path of chasing the carrot. That is a path of ever wanting. What Ajahn Chah said so eloquently, searching for the tortoise with a moustache. It was an eloquent simile because there are such things as tortoises. And who knows? There might be one who sort of wandered in close to Chernobyl and got his genes damaged, has grown a moustache. Who knows? But because there's sort of the possibility there, we think we can attain these things, therefore we go searching for them. It makes sense. So we think can find peace by searching for it. There's an old Zen saying which I remember from a long, long time ago. There was a hungry man who was searching for fire to light the stove to cook his rice. He was looking for a flame with a candle. Looking here, looking there. Where is the flame? Where is the light? If he only knew what fire was, he'd have cooked his rice much quicker. So we have peace, but we're looking for peace somewhere else. And that is our problem. We're looking in the wrong place, so we never notice it. And as soon as you realize, oh, this is fire, this is peace, this is happiness, this is joy right now, then you can cook your rice much quicker. You can have more peace and more happiness in your life. So on this retreat, that's basically what I've been teaching you. And sometimes a question comes up at this time. Yes, we're going to go home, we're going to go to work, we're going to sort of go back to our families, we're going to go back to all this, woo, 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 woo. I'm going to go back to all my monastery and committee meeting tomorrow, woo, 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 woo. I don't have it so easy. I don't escape being a monk. So, how do you deal with that? Simple. You just be here. What's hard about that? I know sometimes, years ago, someone just asked me, said, look, I'm sick, or I'm going to have chemotherapy, and I'm going to be very, very sort of sickly and feel terrible. How can I meditate when I'm going through this terrible, terrible sickness and the treatment for my cancer? And the answer was, very simply, you know, when you're laying in the bed, sort of, you know, really tired, no energy, feeling awful, can you make peace? Can you make peace with that feeling? Just allow it to be. Say, well, I think I can do that. Can you be kind to that body and those feelings? I mean, not just making peace gritting your teeth, but actually respecting them. It's part of the healing process. It's part of being alive. Can you be kind to it? Yeah. And can you be gentle with your body? Gentle also means a bit of patience, not rushing the treatment. Just allowing just, you know, the doctors to do their job. Just allowing the process to work its way through, no matter how long it takes. Can you be gentle with your body? He said, yes. Then you're meditating. Making peace, being kind, being gentle. Letting go of this controller. Letting go of this thing which always wants to make things happen at your schedule. Not on nature's schedule. They always want to rush things or slow things down. That is the problem. So, can you do that? He said, yeah, I can. There you go, you can meditate. When you're working at the office with a boss standing over your shoulder saying you've got to finish that 1 hour's work in the next 10 minutes, what can you do with that? Can you make peace with your duties? It's just what I have to do. This is part of work. That's what they're paying me for. So I can rush. And I make peace with my rushing. I'm kind to the fact that I have to really run hard sometimes in life. I can do that. That's part of the body. That's what I'm trained for. And I can be gentle. In other words, yeah, it's going to be tiring and hard, but I'm not going to make it more hard by complaining inside. I can always make peace, be kind, be gentle with having to work hard. And when you're boss or your family, they start scolding you and telling you off. You're stupid. It's all right for you going to Jhana Grove and meditating. You don't know what I've been going through for the last few days. It's been really difficult here, and you just go off and enjoy yourself, and you're just so selfish. You call yourself a Buddhist, but you don't know the first thing about compassion. We have to work hard in the world. You're just escaping, you stupid idiot. If people ever... That's not through experience, I said. I'm just purely acting. When people sort of say things like that, how can you meditate? You just make peace with it. It's the nature of the life that people talk like this. The crows, it's their nature to go on top of those beautiful holy stupas and crap all over the top. It's their nature to do that. That's what they do. So, the dogs bark. And that's what people do. That means that you just have to accept these things. You make peace with them. Look, arguing with the crows or arguing with the all the other birds there, and just getting the dog next door, looking in the eye and said, listen, you should not bark, especially from, 10 o'clock till 6 o'clock when I'm asleep. Oh, rest of the day, fine. Okay, dog, you don't bark or else you'll be in big trouble, dog. I'm telling you, I'm giving you a warning, okay? And the dog looks at you, wags its tail. Woof, woof, woof. You can't teach a dog. That's its nature to bark. It's the same with life. It's the nature to bark sometimes. People, it's their nature to get upset and angry sometimes. They're not enlightened. So in life, we make peace with it. We're kind and we're gentle. Because that's something which you can always do. The point is, this is life. It's cold sometimes, it's hot sometimes. Your body is sick sometimes, your body is full of energy sometimes. And sometimes when the body is most full of energy, a light and bright, it's 10 p.m. when you have to go to bed. And then, when you get up in the morning, that's when it's the most sleepy. This body is just so stupid. Look, I've given you 6, 7, 8 hours of sleep. And then you can't sleep all night, and then you come up here and then you fall asleep. So what's wrong with your body? And your body says, I'm just being my body. That's who I am. Totally out of control. Going towards causes, conditions which I can never understand. So, you're just kind to your body. You let it be. And you're gentle with it. You're kind to it. As you're kind to the angry boss. As you're kind to the person who drives their car into the back of your car, you don't get angry at them. That's what cars do. It's their nature to collide. If they didn't, there wouldn't be any money in insurance. So it happens. So you make peace, be kind, be gentle, allow it to be. It's what nature is. And then you find you can meditate. It doesn't mean you just become a doormat for everybody. What it means is that when there's a time, you know, you make peace with standing up for yourself, with sometimes hissing. That's just what you have to do. So you don't feel guilty about that, you just make peace with it. You're kind to your hissing nature. So you're gentle with yourself. You do your duties. You play your role in life to the best of your ability. But as soon as the role is finished, you don't carry anything from the past. If that's anything which you can learn on a retreat like this, it's just the beauty of the present moment, the total uncertainty of the future, and the stupidity of carrying the past. Because you don't know what is going to happen next. That's the great thing of life. You may have all your plans. Some of you are going back overseas this afternoon. There's probably been a strike at the airport, and so all the planes will be cancelled for another few days. And all your expectations and plans are in total disarray. Welcome to real life. It's actually every time my plane is cancelled, I think, marvellous, this is teaching me the Dhamma. Thank you, Buddha, for reminding me that I'm in no control of what I think is going to happen, maybe not happen at all. And that's what this retreat is teaching you. You can actually let go of the future and you're totally okay. You're fine. So if one can do that, one is learning a lot. Not just how to meditate, but how to live life. sometimes, again, people think, oh, yeah, it's okay in a retreat center being peaceful. That's if you have been peaceful. And it's so difficult in life being peaceful. And actually, of course, it's exactly the same. It's not the life which we're experiencing which causes the trouble. It's how we are experiencing life. In the same way which I taught you, one of the wonderful ways to let go of the thoughts which sometimes obsess and just capture you and involve you in their stupid messages and games, one of the great ways is actually to have a perspective. Imagine the thoughts are out there and you're in here watching, putting a distance between you and the thoughts. And in that distance, in that space between you, that's where you can put in such things as the right attitude of making peace, being kind, being gentle, being soft, being forgiving, letting go, being content. Being content has got nothing to do with the sound of the crow. It's my attitude towards that crow. It's what I put in between the space of my ears and that crow. And if I put contentment between me and that crow, it's no problem at all. It's exactly the same me, exactly the same sound, but what I put in between, my attitude. That is what works in your meditation. That's what I've been trying to train you to do. It doesn't matter if you're dull and sleepy. It doesn't matter if your mind's going all over the place. It doesn't matter if you're planning to kill the person sitting next to you because they've been just giving you such a hard time, they spoiled your whole retreat. It's what you put between you and those psychotic thoughts. If you put making peace, being kind, being gentle, it's just thoughts, that's all. It's just not, you never act on them because you don't get involved in them. You don't indulge in them. You don't get possessed by them. So it's the attitudes which we have to every object of meditation which we experience from moment to moment in a retreat, which is where you train to be a good meditator. It's not just getting nimittas. It's not getting jhanas. It's if you do have a nimitta, how do you relate to that nimitta? Some of you have had those nimittas, those lights, and you've blown it. They don't go any further because you've forgotten the instructions. You get a nimitta, what do you do with it? You try and possess it, control it, make it deeper, make it happen, and that's the problem there. So you put this beautiful attitude of making peace, being kind, being gentle to the nimitta. You don't own it. You don't want it to go further. You just allow it to be. And with that right attitude, you find not only does the nimitta get brighter and more stable when you go deep into meditation, you realize that is what you've been doing all along to get to that nimitta stage. It's just letting go of craving, letting go of controlling, just being. And you use that attitude, not just in meditation, out there in your daily life. You don't let go of the object. You let go in between you and the object. If you do it in the right place, you can meditate in a retreat, and you can get a lot of peace and happiness out there in the world. Busy doing things, laying bricks like I do, or putting on roofs, sweeping the path. It's not sweeping the leaves, it's how you're sweeping it. That was the old saying in the forest monks, forest monasteries in Thailand. They always used to say, you can see how a monk is meditating by the way he sweeps the leaves. Because that used to be our main chore in the forest monasteries in Thailand. We used to spend so much time sweeping and sweeping and sweeping. And they used to say, it's the way you sweep. That will tell you how good a meditator you are. Because some people will sweep with aggression. Sweeping hard. And some people will be sweeping just thinking about this, thinking about that, dreaming about enlightenment. And of course, you can see some people will be sweeping, trying to get everything absolutely perfect. And as soon as a leaf fell behind, you'd run behind and sweep that off and sweep this off, trying to be perfect. And of course, all those sorts of attitudes are stupid attitudes. And other people will be sweeping just so relaxed, and actually they get much more done. Yeah, it wouldn't be perfect, but it would be good enough. sweeping along, always in the moment, not trying to finish, not wondering how many more meters of the path are to go. Just sweeping and just enjoying it with a smile on their face. That was the good meditators. So you can actually see how they were meditating. In the same way, I will see how your meditation has been this last week by watching you clean up and pack up. It'll be very clear to me what you've been doing. If you're trying to get it out of the way very quickly so you can leave or do something else, you've lost the plot. If your meditation, you're enjoying packing up, you're just doing it, it's what you need to be done. You're making peace, being kind, being gentle with packing up. Smile on your face, not going too fast, not too slow, just enjoying packing this and packing that. Not thinking of where you're going to take that suitcase to this afternoon or tomorrow. Just being here with this beautiful right attitude. If you do things like that, you can pack up with peace, with happiness, and who knows? You may be packing up and you see just one of these beautiful pieces of cloth. You close your eyes and the great nimitta comes up and you fall into jhanas. And you become enlightened, packing up. And the whole symbolism of packing up, putting things away, letting things go. You think, just as I put all my clothes, you know, in the suitcase, so I'm going to put all my 5 candles in the suitcase as well. I'm going to put away my will. I'm going to pack away my desires. I'm going to pack away all my past. And I'm going to put it in there and I'm going to lock the lock of my suitcase and I'm going to be free of everything. Not just my clothes, all my defilements, all my hopes and fears, put in the suitcase. And I'm just going to leave it in lost property and let someone else look after it later on because it's not my property anymore. I'm going to let go of everything. It's easy to get actually enlightened by packing a suitcase. If you know how to pack it properly. But the best one is those people who clean the toilets. So when you clean the toilets, look at the water before you clean the toilets and put all of your hopes, all of your past in that toilet and flush the toilet. Oh, that's one of the most beautiful sounds. Just when you push that button and go and it all... I don't know, is that a really good imitation of a toilet? I should actually practice more. A whoosh, okay. Maybe I don't spend enough time contemplating on the toilet. But that's the sound of letting go. The sound of renunciation, the sound of abandoning, the sound of freedom. Whoopee. So that's one thing you can do. And the water in the bowl afterwards, it settles down, it's so clean and pure, just like the mind, after you've let go of so many things. It's totally free and clean and spotless. The spotless mind, once you've flushed everything down the toilet of renunciation. So that's actually, whatever you do in life, it's amazing just how many times it's an opportunity to actually to meditate. One of the best times is actually when you're driving to work. Red traffic lights. They're the most wonderful invention of the Western world. They just show you you're never in control. I told this joke, so you know, that's not really a joke, but it's an observation. You know, whenever I'm in a rush to catch a plane or, you know, some appointment and somebody's late or whatever, and you know, you've only got to get there in 50 minutes, so, you know, you have to really push it. Every time I'm really late for something, you get so many red traffic lights, much more than average. But when I've got plenty of time, I'm arriving there early, not one traffic light is red, it's green all the way. It's as if, you know, they know when you're late and they know when you've got plenty of time, they're just teasing you. What I'm saying, that's what life is all about, isn't it? When you really need something, you can never get it. When you don't want it, yeah, it just comes to you every time. When you're really, really hungry, you get food at lunchtime you don't really like. When you don't really not feel hungry, then you feel, oh, that's my favourite dish. Oh, life is so unfair. You know, that happened to me. I'll tell some stories now. A couple of years ago when I went to Indonesia, I found the food there very difficult. And, you know, the Indonesian food, it's spicy. And even if they try and make Western food, it's Western food with Indonesian spices. I always remember, I tell the monks this story, that, you know, I was in Toronto some years ago, and the Sri Lankans were looking after me there, very nice. And after so many Sri Lankan curries, my stomach was shot. It was really hurting. And I said, look, now, can we have something Western so I can eat it? And so I said, okay, we'll make you a shepherd's pie. You know, good old English shepherd's pie. And I thought, oh, great. And they put the shepherd's pie in front of me. And I started eating it. Yeah, it was potato on top and underneath Sri Lankan curry. Oh. It really disappointed me. That's my life, doing things like that. So where was I going with this? Sorry? Yeah, that's right. When you want something, you don't get it. And when you don't want it, you know, you get too much. You can't enjoy it. So that's actually, that's how, the red traffic lights, that's what it's like. The red traffic lights, they show you, you're not in control. You can't predict. Sometimes you are late, sometimes you are early. So the red traffic lights, you have to stop. So when the red traffic lights do go red, and you pause, make sure your mind stops too. So your car, your vehicle comes to a halt. Make sure your mind also comes to a halt. So it doesn't go ahead of itself to the office or thinking or listening to the music or even listening to like a talk, even a talk of mine. Don't do that. Just stop. So when you come to the red traffic lights, put the mute button on. Or just be there. Because that's what we need to do more in life. We spend so much time traveling and so little of our lives just being, stopping, paused. The trouble is that when we do stop, it's, you know, sometimes it's uncomfortable at first. That's why, you know, it's very hard to find similes for these states because they're mostly mental states. But, you know, I've been speaking a long time, so every now and again I come up with a simile. And this was a simile of, oh, the old simile like life being a journey, that's a common simile, but let's adjust it and give it a twist. Life is like a journey. You're always on the move, always going to the next thing, and it's very hard to stay put and just wait for a while on the red traffic lights of life. But every now and again, you do decide to stop, and basically it's like sitting on a cold stone seat. Very uneven and bumpy. It's very uncomfortable. It's cold. And it's, you know, hard, but it's all you've got. You sit down there, the present moment, right now. At first, it's never comfortable. But the longer you sit on that stone bench, the more warm it becomes. The more soft it becomes. The more comfortable it becomes. And that hard, lumpy, cold stone bench soon feels like the softest of warm sofas, so comfy. This is just the nature of what happens when you stop. At first it's uncomfortable. Just be patient, and it soon becomes very, very comfortable. And you realize that's the nature of life. It takes a while for the happiness to arrive when you've stopped. But if you never stop at all, the happiness, the peace, the enlightenment will never come to you. It takes a lot of stopping in life. And there's many opportunities to stop in life. Each one of you do far more than is necessary. We're constant doers and controllers. And that's why that sometimes, yeah, you get a nice house. I know many people have done this. They get a nice house and then they build an extension. And once they've done an extension, they do something else. They're always doing improvements. The home improvements industry is immense in Australia, but the home contentment industry is just very, very hard. That's what we try and teach in Bodhinyana Monastery in Olamar and Jhana Grove. Not home improvements, but home enjoyments. So you can actually rest and enjoy your house. I often say that most people in places like Australia have got a garden. But very few people enjoy their garden. Always doing something in it. You know, you have a garden there and you're either mowing the lawn or pruning the flowers or the trees. Always doing things. It's great to get a nice garden, but is that what a garden is there for? It's there to enjoy as well. That's why you enjoy this place, because you just enjoy the garden, because you don't know yet where all the tools are to weed and stuff like that. You know, there's lots to be done in this garden here. There's lots of things, but who cares? It's just beautiful as it is. That's what we need to spend time doing when we leave here. Enjoying our gardens instead of always improving them. So split your time up between enjoying and improving. And put more time in enjoying. Enjoying things as they are, rather than always trying to make things better. Always try to make life better. Always try to make you better. Enjoy. Even in work, how many hours do you work a week? 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours? Still leaves many hours left for resting. So what do we do after we come home from work? Get on the phone, look at the TV, get on the computer, whatever you want to do. We waste so much time. We don't have to do that. One of the great things of coming on a retreat is being irresponsible, doing no duties, no cleaning, nothing for these days, and you go home and you've found out that everything is fine, that you are not important, you're not essential for the running of your home, less important for running the universe. So you can actually let go, you can disappear, and everything goes okay. Things aren't going to fall apart without you. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that wonderful? To realize, I am not essential. That means you can let go, you can disappear, you can vanish. More and more and more. Which means that you can allow yourself to be free, you can allow yourself to rest. You can give yourself more free time. And again, free time doesn't mean sitting down on your meditation cushion and trying to get jhanas. That stresses you out, it's just like going to work again. It means sitting down there and making peace, being kind, being gentle. Making the causes of jhanas, not the jhanas themselves. Building up the causes of contentment upon contentment upon contentment. That is what a jhana is made of. Made of this huge heap of contented moments, one after the other, after the other. Just one little wanting, one little desire, and all those accumulated contentments are blown away by the winds of desire. You have to start all over again. So just be content and content and content. And you can do that. But can you get jhanas? No, you can't get jhanas, but you can build up contentment. You know how to do that. And that is the cause. That's how it happens. And some of you are old enough now that you've retired. Oh, what bliss. You don't have to go to work. But a lot of people get bored because they don't know just how to wait in the moment. There's no boredom in waiting in the moment. Waiting in the future, that's where boredom lies. Waiting for something to happen and it doesn't. Waiting in this moment, there's so much peace and happiness and joy. So if you are retired, retire and enjoy it. For those people who have retired already, I am so, so jealous of you. You can retire. I can't. My job doesn't allow me to retire. 65, 70, 75. Once you really become a venerable old monk, you become ever more popular. And that's where my work really starts. For a monk, life begins at 80. So I'll never retire. Oh. So it doesn't matter. I enjoy them. When you enjoy your life, when you enjoy the moment, then there's no problem at all. I'm not telling you how to do this. Look, I've been just working my butt off teaching you. So many hours a day doing interviews and going over the monastery, doing stuff over there as well. Oh, I do 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours a day work. Do I look stressed out? Do I look really sort of upset when another interviewee comes asking the same question? No, it's really weird. When you come up to the interview, you think that your problems are unique, that no one else has got that problem. And I really should say, but you know what I think? Oh, here we go again. That's just what the last one said, and the one before, and the one before that. And the one But you all think you are totally unique. You're not. It's wonderful to know that you know, you're no different than anybody else. So, you know, you're not this hopeless case. You know, when sort of the meditation genes were given out, you missed out, you didn't get them, so you're totally hopeless. No, you're exactly the same like anybody else, and it's wonderful to know that. So you don't have to have any pride, any jealousy, totally at peace with yourself, peace with life. Oh, I was also going to talk about the one thing which I haven't talked about during this retreat is anicca, impermanence. I don't need to teach it because here it is, the end of a retreat. Gee, it went really fast. Did for me anyway. Just here one evening, giving the first retreat, giving the first talk, and now it's the last day. So fast. Just like your life. How many years have gone past? So quickly. That's a nice anicca message. Think how old you are. If you're over 40, the best years of your life are gone. It's all downhill from here. Have you ever noticed when things go downhill, they actually pick up speed? They go faster and faster. So you're all close to death. Not long to go now. 7, 8, 9 days have gone so quickly. Imagine 9 years, that's also really quick. 29 years, where will you be? Another 29 years? You'll be gone. You'll be history, you'll be dust. You'll be food for beetles and worms if you get buried. So, that's always a lovely death contemplation to do, which is part of anicca. Because I remember reading the statistics some years ago, and I look at the number of people in the room, and I think I divide them by about, I think it's 40 or 50. I forget what the number was now. And that's the number of people in this room who'll be dead by this time next year. So, say it's the number 50s. How many people in this room? 70 people, maybe. So, one and a bit of you will be dead next year. Which one will that be? Who's it going to be? Any volunteers? And I'd say, don't just look at the old ones. Because people of your age die too. It could be you. When you actually think like that, it's the truth. It just actually shows you what anicca really is. Just how the passage of our days and our years and our life go really, really quickly. So the Buddha would always say to the monks, the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well are you spending your time? And by saying, how well are you spending your time, he didn't mean the monks saying, oh my God, I'm going to die soon, I've got to meditate, I've got to get into jhana. No. How well are you spending time? How much peace and kindness and gentleness are you developing? That is the best way to spend your time. Just like this retreat, maybe you haven't got nimittas and jhanas, but maybe you've had many, many moments of just sitting out in the sunshine, enjoying the peace, just enjoying being here. Well done. That's well spending your time. Learning how to be peaceful. Learning how just to be at ease with yourself and with life. Not try to change things, but just being with things. Because that is the cause of the jhanas. That is the stuff of enlightenment. Not trying to achieve it, but trying to be peaceful, being kind, being gentle. As the Buddha said to Angulimala, stop, Angulimala, stop. And I didn't mean just stop running. It meant something far deeper than that. Stop always going off into the future, off into the past. Stop trying to get things, attain things, change things, make things happen. Stop trying to do all of that. many times in your life you've been running. Now you stop that running. Sit down and rest and be here. And then you'll find everything you ever want. One of my favorite stories. Don't know the last time I told this, but many of you, when you're not on retreat, you listen to those talks on the iPods. Even the talks I give overseas, you get hold of a copy of them. So it's really, I can't avoid telling these stories again and again, because you keep hearing them. Of course I tell them, you know, when I go to Indonesia, you tell them, and you go to Sri Lanka, you tell them, you go somewhere else, you tell them, and it goes around. But this is the story of the old monk. Once upon a time, there was an old monk who was wandering through the country from place to place, living so simply and peacefully. And he came to this poor man's hut just a couple of days before the rains retreat was to begin. And these people, they gave him a meal for that morning. Even though they were poor, they gave him whatever they could. And they liked this monk so much, they were devout Buddhists. And they said to this monk, "Monk, the rains retreat is coming soon. Why don't you spend it close to us? There's a very nice meadow next to a river close by. I can build you a simple hut. It won't be palatial, but it will be comfortable. And my wife, my family and I will be so happy to feed you every day. Not expensive food, but good food. There's enough. Please, can you do us the honour of allowing us to look after you for the rains retreat?" And the old monk took pity and had compassion on his family and said, "Okay." And so for the next 3 months, they would feed this monk. And the monk would teach them meditation and teach them Dhamma and tell them a few jokes like every good monk should. And after a couple of months, they loved this monk. He was like a grandfather to them. This wise old being who came into their life. And they got so attached to him. Even the children just loved him. And of course, at the end of the rains retreat, he said, "It's time for me to go now." And they said, "Oh, please don't go. Please stay here. We just love you. You're like part of the family. You've helped us so much. You're so wise and kind. You know, you've taught us that kindness, and I don't argue with my wife anymore. She doesn't argue with me. The whole family has just really grown so much because of you. Please don't go." And they all begged him to stay. And he said, "A monk can't stay. We have to go." "But," said the old monk, "because of your kindness, I'm going to make sure you don't have to want for anything anymore. Because," he said, "in my meditations, I found out that not far from here is a buried treasure. In fact, there's so much buried in the ground there that it'll make you richer beyond your wildest of dreams." Now remember, the man wasn't enlightened. He wasn't a non-returner. He was just an ordinary guy. And when he heard there was so much money around, where? Let me know. And the old monk said, "You have to follow the instructions. Remember, I'm an old monk, I don't lie, so listen carefully. In the morning, at dawn, stand in the threshold of your hut and face the rising sun. Take your bow and arrow, point the bow at the rising sun. And when the sun comes up above the horizon, let the arrow fly. And where the arrow falls, there you will find the great treasure, more than your wildest dreams. Now I have to go." And they let the monk go. And they weren't so sad, because they all knew they're going to be rich tomorrow. And the following morning, there was the man, very early in the morning, waiting and waiting, with his bow and arrow, standing at the threshold. And his wife was waiting there, with a spade. They were very sexless in those times. So, as the sun came up, he put the arrow in the bow. He let the arrow fly, went a long way,
And they all ran after it.
And he made the wife dig the hole. Deeper and deeper and deeper she had to dig. And what did she find? Nothing. No, only trouble. Because that place where it landed was a field belonging to a rich man. And a rich man arrested them, or tried to, and said, "You sport my field, that's against the law, you're all going to be in trouble." And the wife said, "It's not my fault, it's his fault." So pointed to the husband. And the husband said, "It's not my fault, it's that old monk's fault." Always pass the buck. So, that rich man, he happened to be a Buddhist too. He said, "That old monk told you to do this? That's strange, because old monks don't lie." So the rich man thought, he said, come on, I know the answer. Look at the shape of you. You know, you're so poor, you don't eat well, you're all skin and bones. You haven't got the strength to fire a bow and arrow. He said, "Tomorrow I will stand at the threshold of the house and I will fire the bow and arrow and we'll split the proceeds 50-50. I'm sure there's a treasure there because old monks don't lie." So the following morning they were there all together. The rich man, the poor man, the wife, and a bow and arrow. And as the sun came up, the rich man put the arrow in the bow, pointed it at the rising sun, and let the arrow fly. And they all ran after it. And this time it was the poor man's job to dig. So he dug, dug, dug. It's karma. You make someone else do it and you end up doing it yourself. Dig, 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 dig. And what did he find? Nothing. Only more trouble. Because that field belonged to a general in the army. And he came with his soldiers and was about to cut off their heads for destroying his field. And then the husband said, "It's not my fault, it's his fault. He made me dig," pointed to the rich man. And the rich man said, "No, it's not my fault, it's the old monk's fault." And even the general was a Buddhist. He said, "That old monk, I know that guy. Old monks don't lie. There must be something wrong here. What did he say to you?" When he heard about the bow and arrow, he said, come on. What does a rich man know about shooting a bow and arrow? You have to be a soldier to be able to shoot a bow and arrow. He said, "Look, tomorrow morning I will shoot that bow and arrow. And we split it three ways." So the following morning the general was there with the rich man. The rich man's turned to have the spade. Even though he was fat, he had to dig. And the poor man and his wife. And when the sun rose, the soldier, the general, put the arrow in the bow and it went a huge way when he shot it. Much, much further than anyone else. He was a professional. And they all ran after it, and even though the rich man was out of puff by the time he got there, he still had to dig a hole, dig it deeper and deeper and deeper. And what did he find? Nothing, only trouble. Because that field belonged to the king. And the king arrested even the general and the rich man and the poor man and even his poor old wife, put them all in jail. And when the trial came up, he said, "What happened? You know, it's against the law. You can't go destroying the king's field." And of course, sort of the rich man said, "It's the general's fault. He made me do it." And the general said, "It was a monk's fault, the old monk. He's behind all of this trouble." And even the king realized, old monks don't lie. So he said, "I'm going to get to the bottom of this. I'm going to keep you in jail until we find that monk." So he sent his soldiers in all directions. Eventually they found that monk, arrested him, and brought him back to the palace. And in front of everybody, the king said, "You've got all these people into a lot of trouble. You gave them these instructions, and they never found any treasure, only trouble. Why?" And the old monk said, "Because they didn't follow instructions. You should know, king, old monks don't lie." The king said, "Yes, what do you mean they didn't follow instructions?" And the old monk said, "Sire, there is a great treasure there. More than enough for everybody. Tomorrow morning, you shoot that bow and arrow. You follow the instructions. And I'll be there right next to you to make sure you do follow my instructions. And whatever we find, we'll split it four ways. One for the king, one for the general, one for the rich man, and one for the poor family. There'll be there enough even to satisfy a king with a quarter, let alone the poor man." So the king was interested. The following morning he was there. And then he followed the instructions. Stand at the threshold of the house. He was standing at the threshold of the house. Face the rising sun. He was facing that direction. Point the bow in the direction of the rising sun. He did that. And let the arrow fly. And he was about to shoot the arrow when the monk said, stop. You're not following instructions. What do you mean? Said the king. I didn't say, shoot the arrow. I said, let the arrow fly. And the king understood. He was holding the arrow. He let it go. And it flew right down to where he was standing, between his 2 feet. And there, the general's turn, of course, he dug a small hole and found this huge treasure, enough to satisfy everybody. And not just gold and silver, but the treasure of knowing. Let the hour of craving fall. And where does it fall? Right where you're standing, in the here and the now. That is where you find jhana, enlightenment, truth. When you let the hour of craving go, it falls right where you're sitting, right in this moment. That's where you find the treasure beyond your wildest dreams. Do you understand? It's a nice story. And that was told me by this really weird fellow. I think it was an Arabic guy in an airport one time. But anyway, most people, you get your stories from the pub. But I can't go to pubs, so I don't get any stories from pubs. So that's all about the present moment of just being here. That's where you find the treasure beyond your wildest dreams. As soon as you want the jhanas, you want enlightenment, you want something, then you're shooting the arrow over here, over there, and you dig the hole, and what do you get? Nothing but trouble. That's the story of your life. So this is how to let go and be peaceful and be still. And that way, is it the last day of this retreat? I don't know. There's always another retreat coming next week, at least for me anyway. Life goes on. Actually, it doesn't really go on. It's always here. It's just the dream, the myth of life in the future. So the only truth which you have is this moment right now. So for the rest of the day, enjoy these moments. For the rest of your life, enjoy these moments. Just be here. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the peace. There you will find a treasure beyond your wildest dreams. This year I'm 60, so I'm old now. And remember, old monks don't lie. Okay, thank you for listening.